This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Stupidity, home of the greatest media mind ever to walk the planet.
Okay, so here's the deal. He's a true icon in every sense of the word.
He's loved and feared more than any being to grace this planet.
There's two guys. A man with a voice that sounds like Barry White and Beyonce had a Jewish baby.
God himself would pay $39.99 for a cameo. Fact of the matter is, you are about to embark on a transcendent experience that can only be described as psychological nudity.
This is Stu Gatz, and this is Stupidity.
Here we go, Jim.
Tony!
Billy, I have a serious question for you.
Yeah.
Are you surprised at some of the things I've been saying yes to lately, like Wasteland and what we're about to do right now?
This is what I would say. Yeah. What we've kind of run into at the moment, and I don't know how we got here. If you were a third base coach, everyone would be going home on every play, is where we arrived.
The ball home. Yeah. You're right.
Everybody's going home on this.
You're on
this
first and a single. Coach. I'm sending you home if you round third. I mean, don't come near my bag.
What? Look, we are being, I don't know what that means. We're being quite aggressive with the guests that we're having on. And by the way, it is working out for us because the guests that we've had on have been really good. And we're going after some people that you wouldn't expect us to be talking to. But they've been great guests.
Yes. We're going to have Cash Hill on. I can't believe I'm saying this, a New York Times investigative journalist. What am I doing?
Yeah. NYT.
Do you have a New York Times subscription, by the way, Billy?
No. What kind of question is that? No.
I have one.
Why? What'd you have to read?
I had to read something for our show. I can't remember what it was. And now, I mean, all they do.
You can't figure out how to cancel it.
I can't get out of it. I mean, it's unbelievable, Billy.
Mikey, I was talking about it on the main show the other day. I cannot for the life of me figure out how to cancel my ESPN Plus subscription because I signed up and I now have Hulu, which comes with ESPN included in it with the version that I have. And the closest I've gotten to is a page that says you must unsubscribe from the same device you use to subscribe on, which is like the strangest rule I've ever heard. And I can't possibly figure out which device I use to sign up. It's the weirdest thing.
And you must get Stephen A. Smith to sign off on you.
It's impossible.
Once you're on your phone, they keep making it harder. They send you down another rabbit
hole. Did you, Stugatz, I don't think you've ever seen this show. Mikey, did you ever see the show Nathan For You?
No.
No. Never saw okay. It, no. Well, on the show, it's a comedy show where the guy goes and he's allegedly trying to help these small businesses and companies better their business, but he really is just making a mess of things, right? And one of the things that he came up with was for a TV repair shop or TV company to like combat Best Buy by having them promise to give away free TVs. And all you had to do was go to the store and pick up the TV, right? Now, what he didn't tell you in the thing was the TV was you had to go all the way to the back of the store. There was like a limited quantity. And then I don't remember the specifics, but you had to jump through a number of hoops to get there. And then the final thing was The TV was sitting on a table in a room with an alligator locked in it. And you had to go into the room, like crawl through a doggy door into a room with an alligator to go claim your free TV. That's what I have to do to cancel my ESPN Plus subscription.
You have to find the
phone. They have multiples.
You have to find the device you ordered it on, and then you have to, like, what would be the equivalent of that at ESPN?
I don't know, because I haven't, like, I haven't even gotten to that step yet to figure out if there's something after that.
Right. But I think Mikey's right. It's like, once you find the device that you did it on, then it's like, all right, Stephen A. Smith needs to actually do it, you know?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Facial recognition, Billy. This is, I think this is something that's interesting to you, right?
I don't like it one bit.
I'm not surprised you don't like it. I don't like it either. No one likes it.
I mean, I'm not like, I don't know why we have to do this. I don't know why we have to do the AI stuff where we're just faking videos of people saying things that don't happen. Like, why? Can we cure diseases? Can we do something beneficial with this technology?
No, we're too busy on TikTok.
I mean, enough of TikTok. Jeez. I thought that, weren't they going to vote to ban TikTok in the U.S.? What happened to that?
They're not banning anything in the U.S. What do you tell people are making money off of it? That's not happening.
Mm.
Why do you hate TikTok so much?
I don't. I'm just, you know, going along with the whole I don't like this, I don't like that thing. I feel like a real team player. I'm trying to be a team player. I feel like in real life, I'm a lot more easygoing than I am portrayed in the public.
You really don't care about any of this shit?
Yeah, honestly, my perfect day, and it's like a strange thing, is like just being left alone. You know what I mean? And it's not like, and I'm not saying that like if, oh, you see me walking around, you come and say hi, like leave me alone. It's not that at all. Like I love like meeting people and like fans of the show or whatever and like talking to them.
I know you do. Yeah, you're
like,
great.
If my weekend consisted of like just waking up, laying in bed for a little bit, maybe I get up, have a snack, go outside, breathe some fresh air, go back and lay down for a little bit, turn on the TV and just watch nothing but TV for like a day, that would be a perfect day. Not really talk to anyone, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm with dream. You. I'm with you. Mikey, what's your perfect day?
I don't know. I'm trying to steal Billy's right now, as long as it's, you know.
It sounds like a great day. Unfortunately for Billy,
better snack.
Right, but unfortunately for Billy, he's got me and Levitard in his life, and so...
You know, I'm trying to think of, like, what would your perfect day of the week be? Like, what day would you want your perfect day? Would it be Sunday, so you have football?
It would have to be Sunday, yeah.
Yeah?
Really?
Yeah.
Sunday's like a bittersweet day. I'm enjoying it. I'm watching football, but I know I got to wake up early the next day, get back to work, all that stuff. Like, Sunday's like a work day, almost. I would say, like, Thursday. Thursday is headed into the weekend. Yeah,
because you don't have to wake up early on Friday.
Yeah, most people, work on Friday, so it's a little more complicated than that. I think that, you know...
We should be working on Fridays. I didn't ask for any of this. I
mean, we talked about it on God Bless Football on Monday. Yeah. Lucy has a perfect setup in that her Saturday is more important to her for sports viewing, and she has all of Sunday to like recover, which is just amazing. Could you imagine after a football Sunday, and you've been trying to do this for the Super Bowl for a long time, just every Sunday, like you can recover on Monday from all the football you watched the day before. You're fine. Don't worry about it. Just come in fresh on Tuesday.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
We're not getting there.
Would you let me ask you guys a question for your perfect day?
Here's the other great thing about Lucy's schedule, Billy. Her Friday is a Tuesday. Did you know that? She's done on Tuesdays.
Well, that's because she's traveling the country the rest of the time. But
I know. She's got a great schedule, great job, and she's great at her job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what is Lucy running for office and you're endorsing her. What's going on right now? It's weird.
I like Lucy on God Bless Football every Monday morning with us. She's been great. That's
all. I do too. I really, you know what I like is I think that she has a great like energy and enthusiasm that we don't have.
Yes, on Monday morning, right? Because she's had
just
to relax.
In general. we've been doing it so long that like the joy has been beaten out of us. Yeah.
You're right.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
I have no idea.
Oh, I have a question for you guys. Like, in your perfect day, is your family involved in your perfect day?
Oh, Jesus, put me on the spot.
It's a tricky question.
Yours? I forgot what you said. Your perfect day was all about. Is your family?
I will guarantee you this. They're not there the whole day.
Morning?
Sure.
But at what time? Because if the morning involves like waking you up, not 1 o'clock, that's when kickoff is.
Yeah, but Mike wants the family out then, I think.
Maybe like 10 to 12, 11. 30. Yeah, 10 okay.
To 12.
You're more generous. You're more generous than I was being.
My father-in-law listens to this.
I think I told you. What are you cooking for him this weekend?
Thinking about smash burgers.
Okay. Excellent. I think that I've told you guys in the past, and it's never worked for me when I like am asked, what do you want for your birthday or, you know, Christmas holiday, whatever, like, oh, what would you like? And I just always say, like, I just want a quiet day. Can you just give me a quiet day? And
silence.
Yeah. No, just a day. Just give me like a quiet. I've yet to receive it. Not once has anyone just written quiet day, and given me a piece of paper with it. I feel like I'm very direct with it too. Like, that's just all I want.
Wait, so you want it delivered just on a piece of paper? Like, yeah, like writes down a quiet day?
Like a voucher. Like, I don't know if you guys, I mean, you're a little bit older. And Mikey, I don't know how long like you were with your wife before. How long have you been married?
8 years.
8 years. And how long did you like date before that or whatever?
2.5.
So like you maybe got like the early end of this, but like, in the like dating world, there's like, you'll see like on social media and stuff like that, there's like companies now that'll sell you like little coupons that you can like, you know, like, oh, for date night out, oh, here's flowers, oh, like a foot rub or something like that. You know what I mean? Like things that you can buy and then like, oh, I'm redeeming my thing. We're going on a date today. I got this coupon for it, right? Like that's more what I'm thinking. Like here's 3 coupons for 3 quiet days. It's like, oh my God, I'm going to cash one in today. Like, get out of here. I just cashed in my coupon.
Is there a way to cash that coupon in to your wife?
No.
Where you're not an asshole?
Not successfully, I don't think.
No, your wife.
Is there a way you can hand her that coupon and just be like, this is what I want?
Well, the thing is that I don't mean it in a like way to.
Of course you don't. But that's not. But
the only way that works, Mikey, is if the wife gifts it to you. That's that thing.
Well, yeah, no, obviously. I can't just pay them to get out of the house.
Hey, I got this from Uncle Ted.
I printed this out myself.
Yeah. Uncle Ted said that I could use it on anyone. It applies. There's no restrictions apply.
Gave me hundreds of these.
Yeah.
You can't get mad at me. It's a coupon.
All right. Let's.
Are there still Teds?
What'd you say?
Are there still Teds?
I don't know why I went Ted.
Theodore's.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Ah, there you go. Oh, man. What are we doing? What is this?
Put that on the poll, please.
You know what I have? That this is just related to coupons. I have a Groupon that I was gifted for my birthday in April for a massage that is, I'm getting emails saying it's set to expire. And I legitimately like, I'm looking ahead and like, you have 21 days before this expires. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to make it. I don't see where in 21 days I'm going to fit a massage in. Got to be honest with you. And I also like to the point of like the quiet day coupons, like not sure how I'm going to tell my wife, like, hey, I got this Groupon that I've got as a gift that I need to use. And you got to have to take care of the 2 kids while I go and just have a relaxing massage.
Just tell her that one before you give her the quiet day one.
Yeah.
Just blame everything on Uncle Teddy.
Yeah. Teddy told me.
You give her one too, Billy.
Yeah,
you give her one. You say, hey, you can redeem this whenever you want. Give it to me. I'll take care of the kids for the day. That's how you get your quiet days.
Just can't be the same day as me.
Right, exactly right. All right, let's get to Cash Hill here. She's a New York Times tech reporter and an author. New book out, Your Face Belongs to Us, A Secret of Startups' Quest to End Privacy as We Know. I don't know what's gotten into me, but I'm kind of into these stories. Let's get to Cash. Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Miller Lite. A lot's changed over the years. One thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So, what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. For me, it is simple. What I want out of my light beer is ice cold and great taste, and that's exactly what I get from the original light beer, Miller Lite. Miller Lite keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most, a light beer that tastes like beer. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Stu, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Cash, you're a New York Times tech reporter. Were you surprised when you got an invitation to do this show, a show called Stupidity, whose logo is me sitting on a toilet bowl?
Well, I had done the Dan Le Batard show before, and I really liked talking about tracking my husband with AirTags there, and was left with a good impression. So the Le Batard and Company is what got me in here.
Wow, the rare good impression that we left with somebody.
Yeah,
I think you did call me really creepy. I do kind of recall.
Oh, good,
that.
That's great.
And you left with a good impression.
You're the ones who should be scared of me.
Why is that, Cash?
I'm just gonna run all your faces through a face search engine and find the photos on the internet you didn't want people to know about.
Oh my God, it's terrifying, the whole thing. She has a new book out, Your Face Belongs to Us: A Secretive Startup's Quest to End Privacy as We Know. And again, Cash Hill is with us. Why'd you write the book? Like, why did this topic kind of grab you?
I mean, when I found out about this company, Clearview AI, a few years ago, it was just one of the craziest tips I've gotten as a reporter, that they had scraped the internet of a billion photos, you know, without people's consent, put all these faces in a database, made this facial recognition app, secretly selling it to the police. I mean, that alone was wild. And then the more I dug into the company, the more crazy things kept coming out. And facial recognition technology itself, how we got to this point, I was just obsessed and I wanted everything about it. And I honestly have never felt quite like that about a story before. And everyone around me, my editors at the New York Times, said, you need to do a book. You're too obsessed.
Well, what are the other crazy things that you started discovering about this company?
Well, I mean, just right off the bat, you know, I Googled Clearview AI. I find there's not much on the internet about them, but on a startup tracking website called PitchBook, there's not much information there except for two investors, one I'd never heard of before, and the other being Peter Thiel, who's a big name in Silicon Valley. And you know, reached out to a spokesperson. Spokesperson's like, never, I don't know. I don't think I've heard of Clearview AI before. Let me look into it. And then stops talking to me.
Oh.
And that happened to me a lot. I would try to find people connected to the company and they wouldn't want to talk to me.
Always a sign something nefarious is going on, you know?
They had one employee on LinkedIn. His name was John Good. He had two connections. I said, well, that looks like a fake person. Sent a message, didn't hear back. They had an address on their, you know, their very bare website. It was just a few blocks away from the New York Times office. I walked over to where Google Maps said the building should be. It did not exist. And yeah, it just kept getting weirder and weirder from there. They were exposing all this information about people, all the places on the internet where their face appeared, but they wanted to stay in the shadows. And it was just like a detective novel. I mean, it was just kind of thrilling to try to find out what was going on there.
How did you find out about the company?
So I got an email from a tipster who I knew. He was a public researcher really interested in police surveillance technologies. And he sent me an email with a 26-page PDF attached to it. And he said, hey, I did a FOIA to the Atlanta Police Department, and they sent me this, and it's pretty wild. I think that this company has passed the Rubicon on facial recognition technology, is how he put it. And I start reading this PDF, and it starts with a privileged and confidential legal memo that's been written by a really high profile lawyer that Clearview AI has hired. His name's Paul Clement, in private practice now, but he had been a solicitor general of the United States. And in this memo, he's saying that Clearview AI works really well, that he ran on lawyers on the at the firm, and it brought up photos of them. And he's essentially explaining to police why this tool is not illegal and just reassuring them that they won't break, you know, state and federal laws by using the tool. And then there were some like advertising materials on Clearview AI to saying, hey, this is Google for Faces. This is great. Get a free trial. And I was one of many hundreds, thousands of police departments that were trying out the app on a free trial basis.
I would have loved to hear that pitch. Like, do you know what the pitch was? Do you know anything about the pitch?
I remember the some of the email advertisements I said, and it said, stop searching, start solving. They had a lot of mottos that were just kind of like, Google your way to closing that case.
Wow, that is crazy. And so as you dug into this story and you started to get intrigued and looked into what it is this company was doing, what did you discover?
So Clearview AI did not want to talk to me. And so
at all, like you were relentless. You're a great reporter. You're a great writer. So you were relentless and no one wanted to speak to you.
Yeah, not at first. They were really, I think they were just hoping, let's ignore this woman, let's ignore this reporter, and she'll just go away.
Right.
She'll go away. Yeah. But, you know, this memo said that hundreds of police departments were using it. So I started trying to find police officers who would use the app. And so I reached out to a lot of departments, and I found this detective in Gainesville, Florida, financial crimes detective. And, you know, he's telling me, I love this app. It's great. I had a stack of unsolved cases where I had somebody at an ATM or at a bank counter, and they hadn't worked when I ran it through the state face recognition database, like going through criminal mugshots and, you know, state driver's license photos. And then I put all these photos through Clearview AI, and it's just solving, you know, case after case after case for me, or I'm getting hit after hit after hit. You do need to do, ideally, some more investigating after you get a facial recognition hit. But he said, yeah, it's incredible. I was on patrol one night, and there were a bunch of University of Florida, you know, college students hanging out outside of a bar. I asked them if I could try the app on them, and I was able to identify most of them. It linked me to their, you know, their Facebook profile, their Instagram profile. And he said it was, The kids were like, oh, that's cool. Like, I want that. And he's like, sorry, this is only for the cops. And he said he'd be their spokesperson if he could. And once I got police talking to me, that kind of helped open the door to get some people who are connected to Clearview AI to talk to me.
So obviously the police departments would justify this as being for good if they're using it to solve crimes or whatever. But this is technology that can be used for bad as well, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is a way to unmask somebody, to find out somebody's identity who doesn't necessarily want you to know who they are, and to find photos of them on the internet that they might not know is there, might not want you to find, photos that may have been obscurely out there, not attached to their name, but now if you search the internet by face, they come up. So I've been thinking a lot about this because I don't know if you've been following this like local political race in Virginia. This woman who had made sex tapes online with her husband on a site called Chatterbait, which is the combination of chatting and masturbating. And she's now a nurse. She's running for office. And somebody found these old sex tapes, didn't have her name. I don't know how the Republican operative who dug them up and gave them to the Washington Post found them. But, you know, very possible that it was a face search.
Wow. But Billy's right. It could be used, like, there is some good in this, but there's also a lot of evil in it, right?
When did we stop using technology for good? Like, when did we stop trying to advance things and make things better and just use it for pure evil?
I mean, solving crimes pure evil? No. I mean, I think
No, but people's privacy.
If you're a bad guy, solving crimes is evil. Yeah.
I mean, I think that this can be very creepy, and just the idea that you can't just be anonymous in public and then you might have a sensitive conversation and somebody's like, ooh, that sounds juicy, I wonder who those people are, and they take a picture of your face and then look you up and they know, or you know, you're buying some hemorrhoid cream at the pharmacy and somebody just snaps a photo and they're like, ha ha. You know, a woman walking out of a Planned Parenthood who just had an abortion and protesters take a photo of her and can find out who she is. I mean, there are so many creepy ways it could be deployed, as well as good ways of solving crimes.
Billy, why did the hemorrhoid cream get?
I thought it was a good example. I thought it was a good example. I like the ha ha at the end. Honestly.
We've all been there, huh?
I'm starting to think if anyone's taking pictures. So, Cash, is there a way that the public can prevent this from happening to them?
Well, so right now, depending on where you live, you might be better protected than other places. So if you're in Illinois, there's a law there to protect you. If you live in California or Connecticut or Virginia or Colorado, there's a law that says you have the right to access information a company holds on you and get it deleted. So you can go to Clearview AI or to PimEyes, one of the other public face search engines that's out there that's very much like Clearview but available for public use. And you can send them your photo and your driver's license, which kind of creeps some people out, and say, get me out of your database. But if you don't live in one of those places, you don't really have much protection beyond just wearing a ski mask all of the time.
The idea of sending a company that you don't know more information about yourself, hoping that they then voluntarily delete all the information they have on you, seems insane.
Yeah, people don't love this about yes, you are having to send this. They do say you can, you know, blank out your address and stuff like that. They ask
Billy,
you to do
the
that.
The same people along Clearview own that company too.
Exactly, right. Yeah, you're just providing them more information for yourself. So I have a question. I came through customs not too long ago. I was on a cruise. I think it was like a year or two ago. I came through customs. I have my passport out. At no point does anyone check my passport. They just have cameras or whatever that are just following everybody on their way through. They're like, are you a U.S. citizen? You can just walk through. Is this the technology that they're using, just kind of scanning our faces as we're walking through?
Did you scan your passport somewhere along the way?
I didn't. I mean, I may have on the way in, but on the way out, I mean, it was just to the Bahamas. So it wasn't like it was a lot of international travel, but it was just like everybody just walk right on through. And then you're walking through, you see there's cameras kind of mounted on the ceiling. And that was the entire check that they did for everyone.
I'm not sure in that specific situation. I did have the experience, you know, I traveled to London for the book to report on facial recognition technology because they're doing kind of crazy things there, like putting cameras on top of mobile vans and just scanning the crowd for people that are wanted by the courts and just arresting them. But when I got to Heathrow Airport, I didn't have to wait in a line for hours. I just took my passport, put it on a scanner. There's a biometric chip in your passport that has your facial print on it. And so a camera just looked at me, made sure that my face matched the chip in my passport, and I just walked right in. And it was really convenient.
See, I think that's two gods, and Mike, you will agree with me on this. I'm not sure that this is one of your primary concerns with this technology and what it's doing. But when I had that experience coming off the cruise ship, one of the first things that I thought was, look, I like action movies. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought, how is Michael Bourne going to be able to survive situations like this moving forward? You know what I mean? Like, if you know immediately who he is, the fake passports aren't going to work anymore. How are we going to continue to have these great pieces of cinema moving forward if this technology exists to kind of prevent these heroes from getting through international borders?
Yeah, sure. Just before you answer that, it's Jason Bourne, and get it right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Michael Bourne. No, I was thinking about the Houston Astro.
I was like, Michael Bourne.
Who is it? Michael Bourne's in trouble. Jason Bourne will be Houston fine.
Yeah, Jason Bourne. Sorry.
$5.
You got sports in your brain.
Yeah.
What was the question?
I don't know. It doesn't matter anymore.
Cash, you remember the question he asked?
Well, what I was going to say is that as I was finishing the book, the CIA actually sent out a kind of warning to all of their officers around the world and said, you need to be more careful meeting with informants because there's all of these artificial intelligence tools for tracking people as they're moving through public spaces now. And people are getting killed because of various AI tools, including facial recognition. And I've thought about this kind of with my sources, just meeting somebody in, you know, a dive bar where you left your phone at home used to be kind of a safe way to meet someone. But now if you're in a place that has cameras everywhere and they're running facial recognition technology on those cameras, aren't just happening in places like Moscow, Russia, and China. You know, there's very sensitive ways that this can affect your life, and especially if you're a Jason Bourne or
Michael Bourne.
Michael Bourne has going on, but right. You know,
he's just a leadoff guy for the Astros, I think.
Yeah, center fielder.
It would be hard for Jason Bourne.
Cash Hill is with us. She's a New York Times tech reporter. She has a new book out, Your Face Belongs to Us, A Secret of Startups' Quest to End Privacy, as we know. So they brought it to Facebook and Google, correct? And what was their response to it? They wanted to try to sell it to them, correct?
Well, Google and Facebook, I mean, this is something that was really interesting to me researching the book. They had both basically developed this technology themselves. Like, they had developed the ability to take a picture of someone's face and, you know, match it to other photos of them. And they both decided it was too risky. Like, it was too dangerous for them to release that ability to the world, which is, I mean, as a privacy technology reporter, I don't think of Google and Facebook as necessarily being super careful when it comes to using people's data or being afraid of crossing lines. Google is the company that sent Street View cars around the world to map, you know, take photos of everyone's home and put it on the internet. And so that was interesting to me that Clearview did wasn't a technological breakthrough. It was an ethical breakthrough. They were willing to do something that these other companies had decided was taboo.
Is this kind of inevitable? I mean, we're all kind of sort of okay with the fact that our phones are always listening to us. You know, you mentioned, you know, taking a trip to Tahiti, and then all of a sudden your phone is showing you ads for, you know, round trip flights to Tahiti. So is this sort of like inevitable to happen next?
I don't know if it's inevitable. I think there is a possibility we could have a future where we all have an app like this on our phone and we're face searching each other, or, you know, yeah, companies are face searching us all the time. I mean, I think about Madison Square Garden. I think you guys have heard of it. They've got some teams that play there and they installed facial recognition technology a few years ago for security reasons to keep out, you know, people who are violent in the arena. And then James Dolan decided this would be a good way to punish lawyers, law firms that have sued us, because they're always dealing with, you know, slip and fall cases and shareholder suits. And so they went and banned thousands of lawyers that work at firms that have sued them. And if you're, you know, a lawyer that's at one of the personal injury law firms that's on that list, when you try to get in, they just turn you away at the door and say, you're not welcome here until that case gets dropped, even if you're not working on the case. And so I could imagine this world in which companies are kind of tracking us in the real world in the same way that we are currently tracked on our phones. And I do think that's a dystopian outcome. And I don't think it's inevitable, because one of the lessons of the book is that privacy laws work. You know, Clearview AI got kicked out of Europe. The European privacy regulator said this breaks our privacy laws. But in the U.S., we don't have a federal privacy law.
Mikey, I want you to make your own good joke, because it's a good joke.
Madison Square Garden installed facial recognition to keep good players off the Knicks. That's why they did it.
What are you shaking your head about, Michael Bourne?
We're all allowed one an episode. Really. That was mine.
Feel free to insert that in earlier.
So Google and Facebook said no, or they have the technology, but this company forged ahead, right? And so where are they at right now?
So Clearview AI is, I mean, still working with police departments around the country. They have contracts with the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI. They have gotten funding from the Army and from the Air Force. The Air Force had them doing research into augmented reality glasses that can just do this in real time as you look around at people. I tried them out. Juan Tontat showed them to me. They're still doing okay. They've been sued in a few states, in the United States, in Illinois, in California, in Vermont. And those suits move slowly. They're fighting them. So they're kind of embattled, but still in business.
How concerned should we all be about this?
I mean, it's your face, right? Like,
yeah.
I think if you're worried about you know, a world in which you can't walk down the street and just assume you're anonymous. If you're, yeah, I mean, worried about somebody just taking your photo and going to PimEyes, which is a public face search engine, much like Clearview, but that anyone can use, and that they might find photos of you on the internet that you don't want out there or embarrassed about, like, you should be concerned. I've kind of been telling people, like, go try PimEyes, like, find out if you have photos that you don't want on the internet. And PimEyes does allow people to opt out. You can get your photos out. And if you are lucky enough to live in one of those states with a privacy law, you can ask Clearview and PimEyes to delete your face.
What were the glasses like when you tried them on?
So they've come a long way. I've tried, as a technology reporter over the years, I've tried a lot of augmented reality glasses, and some have been pretty awkward over the years. This was made by another company, Vuzix, and they're pretty like lightweight, and the screen worked really well in a way that like Google Glass did not. And so Clearview AI, the app, was loaded up on it. And so I looked at Juan Tan Tat, who's the CEO, and it just brought up all these little photos of him from around the web along with the caption. So very quickly had his name there. And then I looked at his spokeswoman, who's a crisis communications consultant that they hired after I started looking into the company a few years ago. And it brought up photos of her like at a personal event, and then with a client who's a pretty big name. And she said, oh, can you please not mention that person's name in the book? I'm not like public about the fact that I worked with this person. And I just,
and you said, yes,
so
you are. I just counted in 2 seconds.
I mean, I thought it was really revealing. Like, these are the people that are selling this technology. And, you know, she's telling me that's a little too invasive for me. So it was just this casual reveal about how uncomfortable this can be. I've been trying to sell the book, and I'm trying to, like, come up with stunts to do. So the night before it went on sale, hey, if you send me a screenshot of your pre-order, I'll run your face through PimEyes, and I have a subscription, so I get to see the full photo and see where it came from. And so people were sending me their photos, and I was doing this, and it was just, it really is wild how far the technology has come from where it used to be. It just used to not work very well. And it was bringing up photos. There's this one photo of somebody who it was from like, a site that was revealing as to his sexual preferences. And he is just in the photo, in the background, in this little crowd, like watching this exotic dance. And I was just like, I can't believe the technology works this well and is able to bring this up. And he's like, I had no idea that photo was on the internet. I didn't even realize they were taking like photos at that event. It's crazy.
How easy would this technology be to fake? Like if I got a nose job or something, or if I was going around with like a fake mustache, it still is able to pick up stuff like that. No, but like if you were to change the structure of your face, is that something that it still, because it checks so many points or however it works, it's still able to identify you?
So these algorithms, it's neural net technology. It's a little hard to know exactly what they're looking for, but it does seem like a lot of the information comes from kind of around your eyes. There are certain parts of your face that are more high information. So yeah, like maybe if you got extensive plastic surgery, it would work. It does not work to just wear a COVID mask. I've tested that myself. I talked to Edward Snowden, the NSA whistleblower, about this, because I was wondering how much were they talking about facial recognition technology when he was at the NSA. And he's like, yeah, I think that everyone's going to have to start wearing these like 3D printed plastic masks. That's what Jason Bourne will have to do. Mm. He'll have to like get your face on a mask and then wear it. And that's how he'll get through the cruise ship security line.
And Michael
Bourne too.
Right? Yeah, Michael Bourne too. Yeah.
All the Bournes.
Yeah. Whole family.
But this technology in the right hands, you could see the positives of it if it's in the right hands, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to police officers who have solved horrific crimes against children. I mean, gotten children out of abusive situations because, you know, people make these images, they put them out on the internet, on the dark web. The officers get it and they're able to find out who the perpetrator is, or even sometimes who the child victim is, because that's something that some of these investigators told me. Clearview AI is the first time we have a database, a facial recognition database that has children in it. And so, yeah, I mean, there are clearly good use cases. At the same time, police can make mistakes. There are a handful of people who have been arrested for the crime of looking like someone else. They have been, you know, kept in jail for a day, for a week, charged with crimes, had to hire lawyers to get these cases dropped. So even when it's being used for, you know, the right reason, it still needs to be used appropriately.
And how about the future of this company? Like, where do you see, what do you see happening with this private company? That's not so small, by the way. They like to talk about how small of a company they are. They're not, they're growing, and they're growing quickly.
Yeah. I mean, they are a pretty scrappy company. It's pretty wild.
Secretive,
how much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild how they're able to do with pretty limited resources. You know, they wouldn't exist if Peter Thiel hadn't given them that first $200,000. But beyond that, they've only raised something like $30 million, which is not a lot in kind of tech startup land. So they are dependent on continuing to get these contracts from police departments. And, you know, if they get a big judgment against them, like in Illinois that has that strong law, right, or if they're forced to pay the fines that have been levied against them in Europe, it would be the end for them. But what they've done, as I said earlier, you know, it could be replicated. So it's not just about this one company. It's about what they've shown us is possible.
What kind of business is this, like, contract wise? Like, what do these contracts look like?
So the Department of Homeland Security has total paid something like $2 million to Clearview AI. The FBI contract is much smaller. It's just tens of thousands of dollars for like an annual subscription. It was something that struck me when I first started investigating Clearview AI. It was way cheaper than any of the other facial recognition vendors that I'd seen. They were selling subscriptions to some, you know, kind of like tiny police departments for like $2,000 a year, $6,000 a year. I mean, like, this is just so much less than most government contractors are charging.
It kind of makes me feel like that's not what they're in business for. It's not for the good. It's for the bad. It's for the evil, right? Like, you have the same feeling?
Well, what, you know, when I met with Juan Tantat, you know, when they finally talking to me, realized I wasn't going away, I remember he said, you know, this is the best use of this technology. We are selling it to the police. It is getting used to catch pedophiles, you know, not being used by pedophiles. But when I started digging more into the company, you know, for the book, I did find that originally they were just looking for people that wanted to buy this product, and it wasn't necessarily for the police. They were pitching it to, you know, hotels and commercial real estate buildings and shopping markets, and they were just giving it to the people they're trying to pitch and the people they're trying to get money from. So it was, you know, billionaires and venture capitalists. Joe Montana randomly was one of their users.
What?
Yeah, I meant to mention that to you.
What?
Wait a second. I mean,
Joe Montana. Yeah, Joe Montana is an investor now. He has like a VC firm. And so he has VC friends. And Juan told me, you know, he'd been trying to pitch Sequoia Capital, which he considered kind of the Harvard of the venture capital firms. He really wanted to get an investment from them. And there was a partner there that liked using Clearview AI a lot, and he would use it at work conferences. And one day Juan gets an email from somebody named Joe being like, hey, you know, Doug at Sequoia told me that the Clearview AI is great and I might want to invest in it and I'd really like to try it. And so Juan sent this note to his business partner, Richard Schwartz, this like a guy who used to work for Rudy Giuliani, and was like, oh, I'm so annoyed. Doug at Sequoia won't invest in us. And now he's telling his random friends about us. And they were trying to keep the company a secret. And Richard Schwartz is like, Juan, that's Joe Montana. He is a very famous person. And Juan grew up in Australia. He had no idea. And yeah, so yeah, Joe Montana did get to use the app. I guess he has trouble sometimes recalling faces. And Juan showed me this photo that he took with Joe Montana. And, you know, Joe is huge, has this like tiny smartphone in his huge hand. And Juan loves showing that photo to the police departments he works with because everybody there loves Joe Montana.
I like the idea of Joe Montana using this technology just so like his assistant or whatever is like following around and they just quickly take pictures of people or like look at people as they're coming up to Joe. Like, Joe, remember? He's like, oh, yeah, of course. I met you in 1993. And they're going back to like old pictures of fans.
That's
of
a great
his.
Way to utilize it, though. Like,
it kind of is.
Like, Billy, I mean, it's like when we go outside our studio, I don't know half the people in there. Yeah. I would love that.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like it's just pure evil. I mean, there are some good uses.
It's just also evil.
Right, but that's
it can
the job.
Be like, used for evil.
But that's the job. Like someone's job, though, is to tell the vice. Like in Veep, have you seen Veep?
Yes.
They
of
tell
course.
The vice president like who the person. Hey, you're talking to your cousin right now. You know. So, but now you're taking away jobs, Billy. If you have this technology, you know. Anyway, this was fascinating. I haven't seen Billy this interested in anything in a long, long time. Have you, Mikey?
Can I ask you something before you go? Is it intimidating to go and meet with these people knowing that they have the technology to know everything about you and knowing that you're kind of, I don't want to say being a pest, but being a thorn in their side, writing books and stuff about this and knowing they can just have all of your information at any moment has to be intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for reminding me.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, none of us is, you know, perfect. Like, I sometimes worry, like, what photo is going to be on the internet that I have forgotten about in the decades I've been on there? Like, yeah, I mean, I
spent this entire time looking through my photos.
Oh, were you on PimEyes right now, just scrolling through?
Yeah, deleting.
Yeah,
it's terrifying. I'm so torn on it. I see the good in it. I see how cool it is, and yet at the same time, it is terrifying that someone may have all my information and pictures I don't want anyone seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is hard to say whether the technology is good or it's evil. It's because it's ultimately about who is using it, and it's you can only trust the technology if you trust the person who's wielding it.
Right. Like Joe Montana is using it for good. I'm coming for sure. Everything in Joe Montana's hands. You know?
We trust Joe.
Yeah.
Cash, this was great. Again, check out the new book, Your Face Belongs to Us, The Secret of Startups' Quest to End Privacy. As we know, New York Times tech reporter Cash Hill with us. We really appreciate it. Very interesting stuff. Good luck with the book. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. This is so fun.
Stu Gatz, how did you feel when Cash remembered you from an interview that I, between us, you 100% did not remember doing?
Thank you, Billy.
It's just between us. It's just amongst friends here.
I know. I wish I had that technology so I could have run her face through it.
I was thinking maybe Cash had the technology and ran our faces through some things beforehand.
Yes. So you sense my
discomfort. Yeah.
That she knew me and I had no idea who she was, even though she was on the show with us for 25 minutes.
Well, knew you and then and called you out on something that you did seemingly months ago. And you're like, ooh, I don't remember that one.
Thanks for bringing it back up.
Yeah.
And you called her creepy.
I did.
I mean, come on.
Whoa.
I called Cash creepy?
In the other interview. Yeah.
Oh, the other interview. The one I don't remember. Right?
Yeah. I like you the way you seem to live life, which is basically like, if I don't remember, it didn't happen.
Right. Well, yes. you guys were intrigued by that. I thought she was great. I'll never forget her again, I'll tell you that much.
I'm going to write down, let's put Cash in like 4 months and Let's see if we stick by that. I will never forget her again, because I'm not sure.
So Connecticut is one of the states that you can pull all your stuff. I think we should do an episode where we run my name, where we run my face through it, and we scrub me from this stuff, because that's scary stuff.
Yeah
man.
Billy, I have a question for you since we're asking questions.
Sure.
How'd you feel about Jason Bourne and Michael Bourne?
Horrified. It was a low for me, honestly. Okay, you know, here's the strange thing. It felt worse than the Doug Marrone situation. And that should have felt worse because I did that straight to Doug Peterson's face. But I was like, I don't feel that bad about this one. The Jason Bourne and Michael Bourne one, I do feel bad. And now, obviously, a prisoner of the moment because it just happened. I feel a lot worse now than that one. But yeah, not my best.
For those
did you catch it, Stu?
What did I catch? What, Jason Bourne? Yes,
did you,
I did.
No, you didn't.
Okay.
No, I did, Billy. I did. And for those of you wondering what Billy's talking about, we had Doug Peterson on God Bless Football. Billy took control of the interview and introduced him as Doug Marrone.
Well, I was trying to get things on track, and it backfired spectacularly in my face because we were not getting anywhere with him, and it was just like pleasantries all day long. And it's like, we need to do. We have like 5 minutes left. We need to do this interview. Let me ask an actual question, and then I called him the wrong name. But in my defense,
Doug, you called him Coach Marrone.
I was trying to be respectful. I don't know why, but in my defense, like, I'm like, just like Ted's, there's not many Dougs anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's an easy mistake to make. And then, like, you have essentially back-to-back Doug coaches for the Jaguars, where you had an Urban in between.
When you consider how many Dougs there are in the world, for the Jaguars to have two of them as their head coach, right?
Right, Billy.
Yeah. Just blame Chad Kahn has a thing, I guess, for Dougs. Yeah,
just blame it on Uncle Teddy.
Yeah.
It's depotity. Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Miller Lite. A lot's changed over the years. One thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So, what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. For me, it is simple. What I want out of my light beer is ice cold and great taste, and that's exactly what I get from the original light beer, Miller Lite. Miller Lite keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most, a light beer that tastes like beer. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Stu, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.